Welcome to the deep dive. Think back to any group project you've ever been in, or maybe even one you assigned. Ever wonder how those teams actually got put together and what made some work so well while others, well, not so much?
Yeah, the ones that just clunked.
Exactly. You, our listener, shared a really interesting research paper. It's from the LAK 2025 conference called Diversity Considerations in Team Formation Design, Algorithm, and Measurement.
Right.
So today we're going to dive into what this research tells us about building teams that are effective and, just as importantly, fair.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff for anyone who's felt like group projects were basically a lottery ticket. This research really sheds some light on why that might feel true, and it offers some, compelling ideas for maybe doing it better.
Okay.
The authors get right into a key issue.
Yeah.
How we form these teams really impacts student learning, but often,
Yeah.
while it's not done very thoughtfully, it can even accidentally create unequal situations.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. Why is this, how so important? I mean, apart from just getting the work done, what's the deeper impact here, according to the paper?
Well, the researchers point out something pretty intuitive, actually. If you just randomly assign students, you're probably going to get uneven participation. Some students will dominate the conversation, others might just hang back, not really contributing fully. And then there's the other approach.
Letting students pick their own teams.
Right. And while that sounds like it might lead to happier groups, it often ends up excluding people.
Because they pick their friends.
Exactly. People stick with who they know, and some students, maybe the quieter ones or newer ones, can easily get left out. It's not always intentional, but it happens.
And for the educator, especially in big classes, wow, the time involved sounds intense. The paper mentions someone spending 60 hours just making teams for 240 students.
60 hours?
That's
What?
like a week and a half of full-time work.
It really is. It just hammers home why finding more efficient ways, like automated tools, is so crucial for educators like you listening in.
Definitely.
But the research also stresses it's not just about saving time. Finding the mathematically perfect team arrangement, that's actually a seriously complex computational problem.
Like finding the absolute best combination out of all the possibilities.
Yeah, think about it. Even in a class of, say, 50 students forming groups of five, the number of possible combinations is astronomical. It explodes really fast.
So the idea of one single algorithm that just magically creates the perfect team every time,
Yeah.
that's probably not realistic.
That's the impression you get, yeah. And the researchers are quick to point out that what we even mean by the best team, well, it changes depending on the learning goals.
How so?
Sometimes you want a mix,
Yeah.
different skills, different perspectives, heterogeneity. Other times, maybe for a very focused task, a more similar group homogeneity might actually be better. Or maybe some kind of hybrid. There's no one-size-fits-all answer.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, this leads us to a really key part of the paper, diversity. We often hear, diverse teams are better, more creative, better problem solvers. But this paper adds some layers to that, doesn't it? Some
It
complexities.
really does. While those benefits of diversity are often highlighted, this research points out that diverse teams, especially when you look at characteristics like gender or race, sometimes they actually experience more conflict.
More friction. Why?
Well, and this is crucial, individuals from minority groups within those teams can unfortunately face things like microaggressions or unconscious bias from their teammates.
Right.
They might even be perceived as less competent, which is obviously unfair and has nothing to do with their actual skills.
That's a really important, though difficult point. The paper also mentions tokenism. Can you explain what that means in this team context?
Sure. Tokenism is basically, when you have, say, just one person from a minority group on a team, they become the token member.
A sole representative.
Exactly. And that puts a huge amount of pressure on that one person. They might feel like they have to speak for their entire group, or they might face extra scrutiny, feel isolated. It's often a negative experience.
So just having diversity numbers isn't enough.
Not at all. The researchers really emphasize that. We need to think beyond just the surface appearance of diversity and focus on creating truly equitable and positive collaborative experiences for everyone.
Okay, so given all these challenges, the complexity, the time, the potential downsides of poorly managed diversity, what were these researchers actually trying to do? What was their main aim?
Their big goal was to design algorithms that are flexible, sort of general purpose tools, tools that let educators customize how diversity factors in when teams are formed.
Okay.
They were really tackling two core questions. First, how can we build an algorithm that juggles multiple things like project requirements, student skills, schedules, even who students prefer to work with, but does it while being really conscious and careful about diversity?
And the second question.
Second, how do we even measure team diversity effectively? And how can we compare different ways of forming teams to see which methods actually lead to better, fairer
Right.
outcomes?
You need ways to measure if you want to improve. So let's get into their findings. What did they discover about how team formation is typically handled right now?
Well, one of the big things they found is a kind of gap in the field. There are loads of specific algorithms out there designed for very particular
Like
situations.
for one specific type of project, maybe?
Exactly. But there aren't clear guidelines for educators on, which algorithm is right for their class, their goals, and these general purpose algorithms that can handle lots of different criteria, they're surprisingly uncommon.
So lots of specialized tools, but no good toolbox or instructions.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. And another issue they flagged is that many proposed algorithms haven't really been put through their paces.
Not tested properly.
Right. Some are just theoretical, or they've only been tested on tiny, simplified examples that don't reflect the messiness of a real classroom. So there's a big need for better evaluation methods, ways to actually compare these different approaches head to head.
The paper also raised concerns about how some algorithms represent student characteristics. What was the issue there?
Yeah, this was interesting. Some algorithms try to turn student traits into numbers, like assigning a one for male, two for female, three for non-binary, or something like that.
I could see how that might be problematic.
It really is, because it imposes a kind of mathematical relationship that doesn't make sense. The paper gives an example. It might imply that man is equally similar to woman and non-binary, but woman and non-binary are somehow far apart. It's arbitrary and can lead to really biased or illogical team formations based on these flawed numerical distances.
Okay, so that numerical approach is flawed. The researchers saw these problems. What was their proposed solution? This priority algorithm. What's the core idea?
The inspiration actually comes from how people often make decisions. You figure out what's the most important thing, deal with that first, then move to the next most important, and so on down the list.
Like a priority list.
Exactly. The algorithm tries to automate that kind of prioritized decision-making in a systematic way.
And technically, how does it work? You mentioned hill climbing earlier.
Right. So it starts with just a random set of teams, then it uses this hill climbing technique. Basically, it makes small changes, like swapping two students between teams and checks, if that change makes the overall set of teams better based on the criteria the educator prioritized.
So it keeps tweaking things to improve the score.
Yeah, it iteratively tries to climb towards a better solution. But to avoid getting stuck on a pretty good, but maybe not the best solution, what's called a local optimum, it uses something called a spread factor.
Prisbane.
It means it doesn't just look at one possible improvement at each step. It explores multiple potential swaps or changes simultaneously to get a better sense of which direction leads to the biggest overall improvement, like sending out scouts to check different paths up the hill.
Ah, okay, trying multiple paths at once to find the best route up.
Precisely. And this all ties into the priority scoring. The educator assigns weights or importance levels to different criteria. Maybe having common free time is critical, skills matching is important, and diversity is also important, but perhaps slightly less than the scheduling.
Got it.
The algorithm then calculates a score for how well any given arrangement of teams satisfies each criterion and combines these scores based on the assigned priorities.
And how do they get around that problem of using numbers for things like gender?
Ah, this is where the bit vectors come in. It's quite clever. Instead of numbers, they use these vectors. Think of them like a series of yes/no switches or checkboxes for each student.
Like, is woman? Yes, no. Is skilled in Python? Yes, no.
Exactly like that. So you have separate bits for is woman, is man, is non-binary, is undisclosed, etc. This lets the algorithm compare students based on the presence or absence of traits without forcing them onto some artificial numerical scale. It's much more equitable, especially for categorical things like gender identity or race.
That does sound much better, more nuanced. Okay, so how does the algorithm then measure the diversity within a single team? Intra-heterogeneity, they called it.
Yeah, for intraheterogeneity, they use a standard statistical measure called the Gini-Simpson index.
Gini-Simpson, what does that tell you?
In simple terms, it measures the probability that if you randomly pick two people from the same team, they will have different values for the characteristic you're looking at, like major or race, etc.
Okay, so a higher Jeannie Simpson score means more diversity within that team for that specific trait.
Exactly. It gives you a proportion, basically. And it calculates this for each team, then averages it across all the teams in the class.
Got it. And crucially, you mentioned it tackles tokenism. How does it do that? That seems like a really tough thing to automate.
It is, and this is a key feature. The algorithm allows the educator to say, okay, I want to maximize diversity for, let's say, experience level, but I also want to ensure that every team has at least, say, two members who are less experienced. It lets you set a minimum threshold.
Ah, so you directly prevent that lone representative situation.
That's the goal. It uses a specific scoring function, they call it a piecewise function, that actively rewards teams for meeting or exceeding that minimum number of minority individuals relative to team size. It penalizes having too few, which signals potential tokenism.
Does it also penalize putting all the minority members together?
Yes, implicitly. Because the goal is usually also to maximize overall diversity, like the Jeannie Simpson score. Just clustering isn't typically the optimal solution, according to the algorithm scoring. It aims for that balance. Meaningful representation in each team, avoiding both isolation and segregation.
So it's really trying to distribute people thoughtfully.
That's the idea. Encourage a genuine presence across teams, hopefully mitigating some of those negative effects of tokenism.
Okay, so beyond just building the algorithm, the researchers also created this evaluation framework. What was the purpose of that?
The framework was essential for actually testing their algorithm and comparing it fairly against others. It's a systematic approach using both simulated data, where they could control all the variables precisely and importantly, real-world data from actual university courses.
And they defined specific metrics within this framework.
Yes, three key diversity metrics. First, as we talked about, intra-heterogeneity. How diverse is each team internally? They measure this using something called the cosine difference between those bit vectors we mentioned. It's a mathematical way to see how dissimilar the checklists of traits are within a team.
Okay, measuring within the team. What else?
Second, inter-homogeneity. This looks across all the teams. Are the teams similarly diverse, or do you have some super diverse teams and some completely uniform ones? It measures the standard deviation, the spread of those interheterogeneity scores. Ideally, you want low variation here, meaning all teams are roughly comparable in their diversity levels.
Right, consistency across teams. And the third metric?
The third one is solo status. This is a direct measure of tokenism potential. It simply counts how many times across all the teams in the class you find a student who is the only member of a particular minority group on their team.
So a lower solo status score is better.
Definitely. You want to minimize that number. These three metrics together give a much richer picture of the diversity landscape created by a team formation method.
They sound really useful for getting beyond just the gut feeling about the teams.
Exactly. And they use this whole framework to compare their priority algorithm against others. They compared it to simple random assignment, just as a baseline.
Sure.
An AI algorithm called double round robin, which is often used for things like allocating projects.
Okay.
Another one called greedy round robin, which is a more general approach for dividing things fairly. And finally, an algorithm called group matcher, which was specifically designed to tackle tokenism in study groups.
Quite a lineup. So how did their priority algorithm stack up in the simulations?
Well, in the simulated tests, the priority algorithm and that greedy round robin generally came out on top, especially when dealing with complex scenarios. They were good at meeting project needs and balancing competing constraints like finding common meeting times and achieving diversity goals.
Interesting. What about the others?
Group matchers sometimes did best on minimizing that solo statuses metric, which makes sense given its design focus, but it often did this by creating teams of different sizes, which might not always be desirable.
Right. Varying team sizes can complicate grading or workload balance.
Exactly. And the double round robin algorithm kind of stumbled, particularly when there weren't clear individual preferences for things like projects. And it also had trouble when you had multiple identical projects, which happens a lot in courses.
Okay, so simulations showed promise. How about the real world data? Did the priority algorithm perform well in actual classrooms?
Yes, the results were pretty encouraging there too. In one class, the main goals were grouping students by available meeting times and also diversifying demographics. Different setups of the priority algorithm generally outperformed random, GRR, and group matcher.
And did it help with the tokenism issue in practice?
It seems so. The versions of the priority algorithm that were specifically configured to slightly concentrate women, for instance, rather than spreading them too thinly, significantly reduced the solo statuses count compared to other methods.
So actively managing that minimum threshold worked.
It appeared to. Then, in a different project-based class with lots of criteria, project skills, student grades, time availability, even social preferences, students submitted the priority algorithm generally did well across the board, often better than greedy round robin.
And the other algorithms in that real-world test.
Similar issues popped up. Double round robin struggled again with duplicate projects. Group matcher, again, created teams of varying sizes, which the instructors might not want for fairness reasons.
So overall, it sounds like the priority algorithm demonstrated a good ability to balance multiple, sometimes competing goals.
That seems to be the case. And the researchers really stressed something important related to this: the value of using these metrics diagnostically.
Meaning.
Meaning, educators can use these measures, interheterogeneity, interhomogeneity, solo status, to actually look at the teams proposed by any algorithm, or even teams they formed manually. It allows them to check, does this output actually align with my goals? Are there any red flags, like high solo
So
status?
it's a way to verify the output, not just blindly accept what the computer spits out, a kind of human-in-the-loop approach.
Exactly. It empowers the educator to make informed adjustments before the teams even start working, potentially heading off problems early.
That seems critical. So what's next for this research? Where do they see it going?
Well, they mentioned wanting to optimize their algorithm to make it run faster, which is always important for practical tools. And crucially, they want to conduct more classroom studies to see how using teams formed by their algorithm actually impacts student learning outcomes, collaboration quality, and student experiences.
Moving beyond just the structure to the actual impact.
Right. They also want to test it in a wide variety of educational settings, different subjects, different types of assignments, maybe different student demographics to see how robust it is.
Okay, so let's try to pull this all together for you, our listener. What are the big takeaways from this deep dive into team formation research?
I think the number one thing is just the recognition that putting together effective, equitable teams is, well, it's complicated. It needs real thought.
Yeah, it's not just an administrative task.
Definitely not. Just throwing students together randomly or even letting them choose freely isn't really enough. Both approaches have significant potential downsides, especially around fairness and inclusion.
And it really hammered home for me that your goals as an educator are paramount here. What are you actually trying to achieve with these teams? Are you mixing skills, fostering social connections, maximizing schedule compatibility? Your objective has to drive the process, right?
Absolutely. And tied to that is the whole issue of diversity, and specifically tokenism. This research makes a strong case for moving beyond just surface-level diversity.
It's not just about the numbers.
No,
Right.
it's about actively working to ensure that students from underrepresented groups aren't isolated. Designing teams or using algorithms that help design teams with that explicit goal in mind seems like a really important step towards more equitable learning.
And the development of these metrics, ways to actually measure diversity, homogeneity between teams, and solo status, that feels like a significant advance.
I agree. It gives educators and researchers a much more concrete, data-driven way to talk about and evaluate team composition. We can move beyond just intuition or anecdotes and start making more informed comparisons between different strategies.
It provides a language and a toolkit for assessment.
Precisely. It allows for that systematic evaluation we were talking about earlier.
Looking forward, the potential seems really exciting. Imagine having user-friendly software that incorporates these kinds of algorithms and metrics.
Yeah, a tool where you could input your course constraints, your pedagogical goals, maybe prioritize different factors.
And then get not just suggested teams, but also an analysis, like a diversity report card for those potential teams, showing you the predicted metrics, highlighting potential issues like solo status.
Exactly. That would allow educators to tweak things, maybe rerun the algorithm with slightly different priorities, and really fine-tune the teams before the semester even starts. It suggests a future where technology really helps us create better, fairer, more effective learning collaborations.
It's moving towards using data not just for assessment after the fact, but for proactively designing better learning experiences.
That's a great way to put it, helping students learn together more effectively and equitably.
So, as we wrap up, what are your thoughts on this? Thinking about your own experiences, maybe as a student, maybe as an educator, what aspects of team formation resonate most? What hurdles have you encountered trying to make group work effective and fair? We really encourage you to maybe check out the paper itself if this sparked your interest. It's packed with detail, and that evaluation framework they built could even be something you think about applying, in principle at least, to your own team building practices.
Lots to think about there.
Definitely. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.